Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874, and also you can access this show through our podcast at kxoradio.com.
We're not that weekly. We're strongly. We're your strongly wellness radio station, not your weekly wellness radio station. Just want to point that out. Good morning. I'm Scott. She's Maria. We are a show. It's Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Behavioral Health. Podcast available on KXL Radio, and we're going to talk drugs today. And teenagers. Wicked combination.
I know. Just being teenagers, it's
hard. It's already hard.
And then you put in...
I don't know who taught them that maybe changing your consciousness by putting substances in your body was some sort of weird coming-of-age thing that they had to go through and try, but somehow they got that mistaken belief, and some of them really struggle with that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have an expert today. We have Paula Urquidez. Not like she's an expert because she's a teenager and she's doing all that. No, but she works every day with teenagers and trying to help them get a hold of their lives and turn it around and make something positive out of themselves. Typically, that involves not using substances regularly in large amounts. Right, Paula? Good morning.
Good morning.
Is that, that's pretty much the deal, huh? Substance use leads to not such good things.
Yeah, a lot of negative consequences.
And you work with kids, huh?
Yeah, I work with adolescents at El Central Community and Desert Oasis High School, and just trying to help them get through the situations and the issues that they're dealing with and teaching them the tools and the skills necessary in order for them to become successful adults.
How widespread is this? The drugs. I mean, we are probably more at risk since we're next to the border. We're at a drug quarter. There's very high unemployment here in the valley.
Not literally high, like high, but...
The highest. How about that? The highest. Percentage. We have two state prisons in the valley. Let's see. What else do we have? Poverty level. So...
And not a lot of fun stuff to do.
Yeah, and we have really, really hard couple of months of really high temperatures and it's really hot. So how widespread is the... I mean, these are all risk factors.
Well, one of the things that I've seen a lot is I've been working in this field for 10 years now. And for 8 years, I worked with adults. And for the last 2 years, I worked with adolescents. And what I'm seeing is... Now I'm seeing that I'm treating the children of the adults that I used to work with in the past. So there's a predisposition, possibly, learned behavior there, lack of coping skills. So a lot of second generation, third generation use is what I'm seeing a lot of that right now.
Are you saying that usually the ones that are more higher risk are the kids whose parents are using? Is that what I'm...
Well, one of the things that I'm a firm believer is the first school that we have is home. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the behaviors are learned. Anger is a learned behavior. Substance use is a learned behavior.
My baby was born mad.
So when you have a lack of coping skills and an early exposure to certain drugs or other means to cope with situations, I do believe that that puts them at a higher risk. And it becomes more acceptable within the family.
Well, what about the ones that you're saying a learned behavior? What about, you know, just everybody here mostly, in the not everyone, but a large percentage, a lot of people here in the valley, you know, you open the refrigerator and there's alcohol, there's beer, there's hard liquor on the cabinets. And, you know, it's legal to use an adult, 21 and over. And they see that. You know, small kids, as they're growing up, they're seeing that their parents are drinking alcohol at parties, at birthday parties, at baptisms. Kids are turning just one, and they have beer. Are they learning that behavior? And is that leading to other things?
I believe that's where it sets it up to be acceptable because of the old early exposure. So it becomes a norm. It becomes something that is okay. I believe we have a very passive generation right now. A lot of the adolescents that I deal with, one of the main things they talk about is lack of support in the home environment, unable to talk to anybody. So as opposed to dealing with their issues, they would rather numb themselves and turn to substances to ease whatever things that they may be going through at that time.
You hit on something because mm-hmm. you said deal with issues. Do you find that in the population, remember, you're working with community school kids, basically, so these, there's some impairments there. There's some struggling mm-hmm. to get by in school. Do you see, and you talked about the intergenerational, you talked about seeing second generation people from people you'd worked with when they were adults. Do you think that part of it is that these, the people that you're working with are experiencing higher levels of pain or higher levels of problematic life than maybe somebody who is using and not having as much of a problem or not using at all?
I wouldn't go as far to say that they may be experiencing more problems. I would maybe say that they have problems but inability to cope with them. They weren't taught how to manage feelings. They weren't taught to express feelings. They weren't taught to ask for help when help was needed.
When they didn't have anyone, in other words, because they didn't have any support. They don't.
Right.
A lot of them don't have support at
right.
home. But I mean, could it be if they don't have support at home, is that because the parents don't care? Is that, could it be that they're always working? Parents, you know, we have a lot of parents who are field workers and they don't get out until very late and they wake
or
up.
Or school
really,
workers or prison workers or government
you know, just
workers.
Or government workers, you know, they have shift work and they're not there.
Right.
That's, you know, that's a reality that we have, is that sometimes we have to have both parents working to be able to survive and pay the bills.
Right. And that is true, I agree. But even regardless of the support doesn't necessarily mean that one of the parents has to stay home. I just mm-hmm. believe maybe having dinner together at the table, the little things that we tend to stray from now that the way our society is so fast-paced, and it is affecting our youth. It is affecting our youth in the sense of, I do have some children that come from, they are first-generation users. They have top-of-the-line everything from clothing to electronics. One of them has a vehicle, but he does talk about lack of support in the home, where both parents are working, and a lot of times it's not the Xbox that they want. It's just someone to sit there and play with them. You know, not necessarily spending a lot of money, but it's the quality time.
337-8874 is the phone number. We're here on Let's Talk About It with Paula Urquidez, and she's a substance abuse counselor who works with teens in local community schools. So for these kids, you know, it's just like kids don't come with, like, instruction manuals. Fortunately, you know, I was checking my files when I had my children, and I didn't have any parent instruction manuals either.
It was blank. The file was blank.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so what am I supposed to do here? And so basically, probably my parenting can be summed up as a series of my best guesses based on my experience as a child, and maybe like doing like the opposite of whatever my parents did when I think they messed it, and trying to do what they did when I think they got it right. Is that pretty much how we do this? And is that problematic?
And yeah, it's true. Children don't come with instruction manuals. It is trial and error. But we have to remember that we can't wait until the child is 15 or 16 to try and correct or change behaviors. You know, these have to be identified early on, because a lot of times by the time the child is 16 years old, they've already been living that life for a long time. I have a lot of children that I deal with that have had to grow up very young, where there was a role reversal as far as the parent and the child, where the child became the parent. And so now that the parent is trying to be a parent, the child feels like, I'm the grown-up. So there's a lot of conflict there because it's now it comes out in anger as to where were you when I was 5 years old making bottles for my little brother and changing diapers. And now that I'm 16, for all this time you've told me I'm the man of the house, and now you want to take that away from me. So then we have those issues there where there's some backlash in regards to that.
Do you ever see drug use with problematic drug use? Let's, I guess, go there, because, again, really you're talking about a select population. You're not, you don't work with everybody who uses, who's teenager, who uses substances. Many teenagers never work with anybody in some sort of formal way when they're using substances. They try them and like them or don't like them and use them or don't use them, and life goes on. But certainly some kids are really impacted by that, and those are the kids you're working with. For those kids, do you ever see that where there isn't some sort of social or family issue that adds into their problem or fuels their problem? I mean, just a regular kid having a regular life who just happened to start using drugs? Or typically is it a maladaptive coping for feeling kind of thing like you were describing? ¿Cómo la ves?
Mostly maladaptive. I mean, there are some that experimented.
Oops, and I liked it.
And I liked it.
Well, I mean, for those, I mean, it is, there's peer pressure. I mean, the you go to the party, you go to kickback, you know, just or just a party, and somebody offers you something, and you don't want to be say no, or they haven't learned how to, ways to say no to the friend, or it's a popular kid that's say, offering them stuff, or her, and they say yes, and they liked it. So, it can happen.
Yeah. I could see that.
It's happened. You know, it's happened. But I think what we have to remember is Paula, you know, works at the community schools. And for our listeners, well, those are the community school kids. You know, my kid is at high school or my kid is at junior high. You know, those are the kids that, you know, have problems. But we have to remember is that these kids are going to grow up. And if they don't get the help, they're going to also have kids of their own. And Paula's saying that she's seen, you know, she's treating the kids of her former adult clients, and we don't want to be treating the grandkids of parents who she treated as teenagers who were seen that were kids of adult clients that she saw. So third generation.
Great. So this has been going on for like 20 generations, and now I'm sitting there as a parent, and it's on me to break this thing? What's up with that?
One of the main focuses that
was Grandpa's job.
I know. Right. One of the main focuses that I like to work with my kids is in an indirect way. I call it guard your heart and having them think outside of the box. In other words, there's nothing they can do about the past, but having them focus on the future and if they really want to break the cycle with them. It's not necessarily about going back and fixing the issues between them and their parents or for their parents to correct their lack of parenting skills or mistakes that may have been made. But now one of my main focuses with the youth that I'm working with is just reminding them that they're going to wake up and they may be 25 years old, they'll be 30 years old, and because of the choices they make now will determine where they will find themselves when they are 25 and 30 years old. And if they are unhappy now and they don't make changes in their life, then they can't expect anything else than to be where they are right now 10 years from now. So one of the things that, in my experience when I was working with adults, there was two things that the adults didn't possess. They didn't possess a high school diploma or a driver's license. Those were the two.
Those are biggies, huh?
Right. And those were the two, when I worked, you know, the adults would talk about, well, I'm 25 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old, I never graduated from high school. So one of my main goals I push school. I remind them how important it is to them if they want to get out of where they are right now, if they want a different life. I don't like to say it in terms of better, because they are who they are because of the experiences that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about telling them better because I don't want them to think that their life is bad at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to say something different. Mm-hmm. So it gets them on a different mindset and it prepares them for a different approach, maybe a more open approach. and to just start making changes and accept responsibility. And I constantly remind them that they're not responsible for the life that they lived as children. They didn't ask to be born into the families that they were born into. That's just the life that they have. But now it's their responsibility to get better. It's their responsibility to be happy. It's their responsibility to get well. And so in that sense, I do support them. And mind you, a lot of the youth that I work with have never spoken to anyone because of the three underlying rules of don't talk, don't trust, and don't tell. So they've never spoken to anyone regarding any of the issues that they've experienced for out of fear.
What kind of the issues? And you mentioned it earlier. A lot of them have issues, and that's why they use, drugs or alcohol to numb those feelings. What kind of things have you seen? Why is it that they're starting to use drugs?
Neglect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lacking. They're lacking something. They're not being validated as children. They're not being validated as adolescents. A lack of communication in the home. They just feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Could it be depression or anything? Well,
sounds like depressing.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, like an underlying mental health issue.
There might be a possibility, but what I've noticed is that it's just their way of filling a void.
Mm-hmm.
And after continued use, they do develop, later on, do develop mental health issues. Because when someone's using, they're unable to deal with life situations. They think about them, and thinking about it turns into dwelling on them, to where it becomes something that just takes over their mind. And so bringing on these depressed moods and negative thoughts, and so it's kind of like a domino effect.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a chicken, a chicken or an egg. You're a chicken person from your experience, because it sounds like from your experience, you're saying that the drug use, the chicken, creates the egg of mental health problems. But still, feeling a void. There must be a way to put that in the mental health terms.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the self-esteem.
It doesn't sound like a happy, normal place.
No.
I don't know.
You're not happy. If
you
have a
void,
I don't
know how many fourth graders today are walking around with voids in them, waiting to become, 12-year-old drug users. But I'm sure there are some.
Yeah. Especially if those fourth graders went through some really traumatic experiences, either abuse.
Well, and Paul is saying it could be a quiet, dialed down, ignored, non-validated version of that.
Yeah,
right. Because traumatic
kids go through a lot of stuff. Just separation of the family, divorce. All of a sudden, dad is here, and the next day, dad or mom are gone. And that could be a void, like Paul said. There's a void. There's something missing, and they don't know how to cope with it.
Nice.
But okay, so what kind of, going back now, what kind of drugs or what is the trend going on right now in the adolescents?
Well, in the El Centro area, it's interesting because depending which town you live in, there's different substance preferences.
Regional drug preferences.
So what do you mean?
When I've worked in Calexico, there's more cocaine, there's more pills, the R2s or Rohypnols. In Brawley, the North End, there's more methamphetamine use, more alcohol use. So here in El Centro, there's 100% of my caseload is marijuana. Mm-hmm. And some have a secondary of
They're
alcohol.
All named Bud.
there's a secondary of maybe alcohol, mm-hmm. but primarily it's marijuana. And they've talked about one of the things that I'm seeing in dealing with adolescents that are on probation is now they're finding other substances that don't stay in their system as long because they drug test. So they don't want to experience those negative consequences, whether it be going back to juvenile hall. So they're doing other substances that may not either be detected in the test or come out within 3 to 5 days.
Wait. You lost me on your calculus problem here. We started with a void, and then we started filling the void with substances, albeit illegal substances, if cannabis was indeed the substance of choice. And now we're putting them in juvenile hall. What does that do to the void?
Complicates it.
Gives it a tattoo or something, you know. So I guess that kind of suggests that, you know, just as adults trying to formulate a way to help the kids out of the void, I'm wondering how that plays out, because it seems like that would be void number two.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these kids end up with, you said that a lot of them, your adult clients didn't have high school diplomas, so if these kids have,
ooh,
are not,
yeah,
treated,
that's gonna,
okay, yeah,
hurt the old credit,
exactly,
ratio, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, they have problems at school, they have legal problems, family problems, drug use, maybe some mental health issues.
Yeah, and that's when we talk about the biopsychosocial effects, where the entire individual...
You can talk about it, but if they're in probation, they ain't going to hear you.
Right.
You know, if they're in jail, unless you can talk really, really loudly, the walls are thick. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's another thing that it's important for anyone using substances to understand, that they're not going to change, they're not going to stop until they're ready. Mm-hmm. That's just
even if you put them in juvenile hall or in jail.
Right. I mean that's just considered abstinence due to incarceration, not by choice.
Yeah, but it's like baking a loaf of bread. I mean, you know, if you want it to come out faster, just turn up the heat, right?
No, that doesn't work.
But it's not going to be cooked, right?
I mean, I guess it seems a little bit defeatist as helpers to say, they're not going to change until they're ready. And then I don't really have any responsibility to help that readiness along. And I'm, you know, it seems kind of...
Well, I use that as an empowering tool while they're in group, and I explain to them, I says, I'm giving you the tools right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving you
that's
the knowledge.
What, that's the,
and
the
I'm
key.
Giving you, right, and
that's
I'm giving
the key,
you
the tools.
And I'm giving you what you need to build your house. And it's up to you if you're going to build a mansion or you're going to build a shack. Meaning, are you going to, when you're ready to utilize the tools that you've been given, because... Even though marijuana affects short-term memory, it has nothing to do with the long-term bank.
Mm-hmm.
So what they learn gets filed somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I use it as an empowering tool, because in my experience, I've seen that when somebody stops using substances because of someone else or for someone else, the motivation level is not as high as if they do it for themselves. It doesn't seem to be as rewarding. Because when they stop using for other people or other situations, then there's certain expectations there.
Well, it sounds like deep down inside they'd still rather be using for themselves, and that's
mm-hmm.
kind of a dangerous place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yes.
All right, well, it's top of the hour. Let's take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice of wellness here in the Imperial Valley. I'm Scott. She's Maria. We're here with Paula. We'll be right back with more of this.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
And welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio with Scott and Maria. And we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. And, of course, our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Again, that's 337-8874.
And we'd like to thank you for tuning in today or for tuning in every day. Somebody walked up to me at random this week and said, yeah, I listen to you guys all the time. I was like, well, thanks for calling. But no, but you could have knocked me over with a feather. I was really flattered to hear that, you know, that you felt that was worth your time and effort. And that, you know, and that's where we're going. That's what we try and do every week. And thanks to Mario Espinoza, the executive producer of the show, we get pretty close. So. Can't catch us on the radio, catch us on the podcast. If you can't catch us on the podcast, catch us on the drop downs on the IV Press. And
yes.
We're
everywhere.
And
almost.
And hopefully, as you know, a byproduct of the show, the community gets some information, things get easier to understand or accept, and people get to recover, because you know, people don't deserve to really have their lives hijacked by whatever problem's coming up, be it substance abuse or behavioral health or what have you. And that's kind of what we're here to help with. So, We're here today with Paula Urquidez, and she's a substance abuse counselor, and she works with teenagers, and that's a hot topic. I mean, speaking of people who have their lives hijacked, you know, if you're a teenager and you get into this process and pattern of using, and it's coping, and you're coping with something, and all of a sudden you're coping with it because it becomes a bigger problem,
mm-hmm.
and then it doesn't go away very easily, and now you're getting in trouble, and you don't get your license, and you don't graduate, and you get in legal problems.
Like she said, it's a domino effect.
Well, yeah, it's like piling up. It's like dominoes landing on your head or something. What do we do to break that cycle? Mm-hmm. What do we do to give these kids a chance to get their feet under them and get some sort of productive life?
Or, for example, just if our listeners are parents, you know, they have kids or they have little kids, you know, 9, 7, you know, just kids. What can they do?
Is that
to
where
prevent,
we start?
Yeah, what can they do to prevent this? You know, I'm a parent now, and I would be scared and you know, if my child started using drugs, you know, what can we do?
Well, she's 4. That would be really scary.
I know, but you know, just once they come into high school.
Well, yeah.
Or
yeah.
What is the age that kids all of a sudden start using, experimenting too? So I can have an idea. Okay. She's getting close to that age.
Well, one of the things, for the first question you asked regarding what parents can do, I believe modeling behavior that we would like to see our children exhibit is a start, because it's hard to tell a child to do something while our actions are showing otherwise.
How subtle would that be? I mean, if I get up in the morning and say, hang on, honey, I need my coffee to wake me up, am I already throwing out bad vibes?
Probably she'll grow up and drink coffee. I don't know.
Well, I'm already saying that I don't feel quite right, and I need a little substance mm-hmm. to get me ready to be with you. You know, is that poor modeling, perhaps?
Well, not necessarily, because there's not going to be any negative consequence from daily coffee use, maybe yellow teeth, and that you're not going to go to jail, or so the child will see that.
But you could generalize that over
yeah.
and say, well, you're already showing somebody that.
Something else is more.
Is putting a substance in my body to change how my consciousness is perceiving and interacting with the world is a desirable pattern. And you know, kids are who learn that may not be able to draw the line between which substances are the okay ones and which are the not so okay
ones. Just okay. But, for example, there's another one. It's, you know, and I've said it before, at birthday parties, you know, they have, and especially in our culture, you go to a birthday party and you have a little toddler and a baby or whatever, and the parent opens a can of beer and gives them a sip. Oh, how cute. How pretty. And then you take pictures of it, but I don't think it'll be that cute.
And the gift CPS shows up picture door and says, hey, you know, I got these really interesting pictures on Facebook.
You know, I see that and you know, at parties. I do that. I see that. So, you know, other kids are around, the older kids, you know, the 8 or the 9, they're seeing that, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll try that too.
That's probably more clearly an example of
a modeling, not a negative modeling.
Risky modeling, yeah. Risky, you're risky because you're kind of permission giving in a weird
way. Well, drink, you know, smoking cigarettes, you know, also, hard liquor, the hard liquor or prescription pills. You know, it's on the rise.
Does Kid Rock have children yet?
I have no idea. But, and then just the media also.
Well, I mean, they've talked about in the last 15 years, there's advertisement has become so, now alcohol advertisement is everywhere, the drugs in TV. A lot of stuff are a lot of contributing factors, which is why they're talking about that now we have a passive generation, because they're being exposed to a lot of things that previous generations weren't exposed to, and it's a norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a norm. So
it's normal, in other words, for kids to see things like drug use, alcohol use.
Well, and there's kind of a standard that I'll be all right as soon as I get a hold of this product, or that service, or this substance.
Right, and so it's
As soon as my mountains turn blue. Whatever.
Now with the population, with the generation that I'm working with right now, it's very difficult to work with individuals and get them to a point where they want to be. But every day when they leave school, we send them right back into that environment. And so tomorrow's another day.
That wants them to be the way they were.
Right, that environment, which is the barrier for them getting better.
So going back to it, besides modeling, what can parents do?
Talk to their kids. Be honest with their children. Talk to them not about drugs, just talk to them about themselves, the child, their life. Get involved. As a parent, you can't talk to your children too much. You know what's going on with them. Talk about school, know their friends, be involved, and not. A lot of times it's easier to say, well, I trust my child, so I just let them go and do what they want to do. But that's not necessarily, because part of using substances is learning manipulation. So just to be involved in the child's life and just the presence known. A lot of times the children that I work with talk about their parents don't like their friends coming over, and so if the parent isn't aware of who the children are that they're hanging out with, then how will they be able to identify any red flags, or when, you know, maybe catch something before it gets to a point, as opposed, you know, work prevention.
Who are my children's peer group? Who are they running
with? It's so important to know. It's so important to know your kids' friends.
What if they're running with wolves? Can you just say, hey, stop running with wolves? I don't want you, I'm your parent, and I don't want you to hang out with those kids. Or how does that work?
As youth, we have to remember it, kind of the Pandora's box theory. The more we tell someone not to do something, the more we're going to be prone to do it. So it wouldn't be necessarily telling the child, don't hang out with those people. I don't want you to. No, it would just be being honest and reminding them about choices, empowering them that choices also come with consequences.
And I guess during that time as teenagers, a lot of teenagers want to be, learn to, you know, their independence. So, but that also affects culture, because in some cultures, you're not independent, you know. As long as you're in my house, you're not independent, I will say. And in other cultures, you know, we want that our kids to be independent.
We French for yes.
Yeah. So it's different also, you know, and then kids are growing in the culture of now. And so it not might be their parents' culture, but it's now they're here. If you're dealing with first year immigrants, it's hard.
One of the things that I've seen on my caseload, the majority are boys. The majority of my caseload, I would say approximately 80-85% of my caseload is boys.
What's consistent with the population at community school, correct? I mean, it's predominantly boys there, or is it
correct?
Fitty-fitty?
No.
Okay.
Predominantly boys. And I believe that a main contributing factor to that, most of the kids that I work with are boys, is a lot of times when, let me give you an example, when the child is two, there's a little boy, and he falls, and he starts crying, he scrapes his knee. Majority of the time, someone's going to tell him, you're okay, go on and play, you're fine.
No, we're going to call him a wimp.
Don't cry.
Yeah.
Okay? Don't cry, you're fine.
You are a man, what are you crying
for? But if the little girl cries, everybody rushes to her, they nurture her, they clean her wound, they tell her that it's okay. They reassure her. So we have, at a very young age...
If she's lucky. I mean, not all girls get that.
At a very young age, we start seeing the difference as far as, you know, telling the boy, don't cry, you're fine. Don't cry, you're fine. So when a child is raised hearing that, don't cry, you're fine, a lot of times we think, okay, well, I want my son to be a man. Mm-hmm. I want my son to be able to suck it up, as the kids say. Well, in reality, all we're teaching them is to suppress what they're feeling.
In other words, their emotions.
Right.
They don't know how to express their emotions. They don't know. They have never been able to express her emotions.
Well, pretty clearly it's wrong to express your emotions, mm-hmm. or your emotions aren't even reality because mm-hmm. your parents are saying that there's like a different reality.
Right. Yeah. Or if you're expressing
your... You're not
your,
sad. What are you doing?
If you're exactly. expressing your emotions, it shows a sign of weakness.
That didn't hurt. Yes, it did. Come on. Give me a break.
So one of the things that... I mean, this is... The men, now that I'm... The boys I'm working with now, that's our future. That this generation is our future. And so...
These are people going to be changing our diapers when we're old and can't do it ourselves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so in order to ensure that it's a healthy generation...
In order to ensure we get our needs met, come on, let's,
yes.
let's be
well,
honest.
Well, it's the community. You know, they're going to be part of our community.
We're rolling the
like
dice on
not,
you people. So.
Like it or not, they're going to be part of our community. Sure. And, you know, that we want to... That's why we want
to...
assist and
teach them
and
to be
teach
respectful
them, yeah.
and mm. nurturing to us.
But going back to my other question, at what is the age that a lot of these kids that you're seeing started to experiment with using drugs or alcohol?
The average age, I would say, is 12.
Oh, 12
being average age.
I remember
so the
12
average
I was still
age,
playing.
Which means there's some people 9 and some
yeah.
people 15.
Right. At 12, I was still probably playing with Barbies.
Right. And one of the things that, the earlier users, the younger users, I've noticed are the ones that have more of the home issues. They have more of the broken family, abuse, second generation.
So there was some pain there.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the ways that I explain to my kids so that they get a better understanding of maybe what's going on is at 5 years old, they experience a change in their life and they go to kindergarten. So anything before the age of 5 was normal to them. So whatever home environment they were coming from, whether it was domestic abuse, drug use, single parent home, whatever environment they were coming from before the age of 5 was normal to them. Well, once they go to kindergarten, as I said before, children learn by observation. When they go to kindergarten, that's when they start making these realizations of, why doesn't my mom drop me off at school? Or why doesn't my mom come to parent conferences? Or why does my clothes smell like cigarette? Or why does everybody else have new clothes and I don't? Mm-hmm. So children start seeing these things. And so they start realizing that maybe what they thought they were happy, they really weren't.
That's why we have daycare, so they can start noticing the differences earlier.
And so at 5 years old, they start seeing these things, and their what they thought was their happy face starts turning to a frown. So they start noticing these differences.
Because everything was all right because it was the only thing they knew.
And that's why I say that the first school is their home. That's mm-hmm. their first school. Because
and as they grow up, they're getting seen more differences and more and more and more.
Right. So we have this 5-year-old now that starts going through, kinder, first, second, third. And after making all these realizations, things aren't changing in their home environment. They realize, things are not as great as I thought they were. So by the time they're 9 and 10, they're not able to identify that what's wrong with them, but they are able to identify that something is different. So when they experiment for the first time at 11 or 12, that's when they learn that there's a substance, a mood-changing substance out there, meaning that the first time that they use, they realize there's something outside of myself that can make me happy. Mm-hmm. So if you look at this, when they're 12 or the first time they use, they realize this is the first time that I've truly been happy since I was 5. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons where they tend to hang on to the substance, and so because of that feeling. And they learn.
So going back is mostly, could be, what you're saying is a lot of neglect, a lot of maybe depression, filling in that void. They're using a drug to make them, like you said, happy.
Well,
make
and
them
so far
feel
so
better.
Good
make
in some weird way, because things that make you happy, that doesn't sound bad. That sounds
but
okay.
This is, yeah, but
right.
But when you're using drugs, that's usually it's only a short term.
Right, but and this is where the fear comes in of them stopping their use.
Mm-hmm.
The fear comes in because it's not that they're going to stop smoking marijuana. It's that they're going to stop being happy.
How, you know, you're talking about, you know, kids 12, maybe some of them younger. How, who exposed them to the drug? I mean, who, how did they get those drugs, or who introduced them? What are you seeing? Who, when you ask them a question, you know, when was the first time you used, and who gave you that drug? Did they buy it? Did they go to the street around the corner and buy it, or where are they getting these drugs?
The majority of the kids was within their family, their cousins, older cousins, their uncles. So not necessarily mom and dad, but cousins a couple years older than them. Just because that also at 12 years old, that's when youth start going through their self-identification, trying
junior
to
high.
Find themselves, trying to see what their role is, where do I fit in this world. So at 12 years old, they start trying to see which and the other individuals they can identify with. And being that the family is closest, you know, usually starts off, you know, they start hanging out with their cousins, and that's how they meet other people and other people.
Or I think most likely also with alcohol, they just go to the refrigerator and open up a can of beer or a bottle or whatever, the hard liquor. You know, a lot of them keep their hard liquor and just, you know.
To see what happens
uh-huh.
or what?
Yeah, experimenting. You know, just the experimentation. So I guess for listeners out there, don't have alcohol. No, just
well, so, okay, so let's say I'm an adult, and let's say I use alcohol, and let's say my patterns of use are such that I haven't experienced any problematic consequences.
And
you
drink alcohol every day after work.
Well, maybe. I'm cool. For case of an example, let's just go there.
Yeah.
That's
what a lot of people do.
So how do I then go ahead and deal with introducing my children, talking to my children, communicating about my relationship with alcohol and how that may be okay, and there may be some different non-okay versions, and there may be some appropriate use versus inappropriate use type issues, et cetera, et cetera.
And, well, with alcohol, being that it is legal, it's about teaching them responsibility. So
you're educating them.
You're educating. Because, I mean, the other substances that are illegal, it's the obvious that that's how we can speak to them, that it's illegal and, you know, these are the consequences. But as far as the alcohol goes, if you want to talk to your child based on the behavior that you're exhibiting, you know, yes, you know, mom's going to have a beer, but I'm not going to drive. You know, mom's going to have a beer, but I'm not going to go and start dancing on tables, or
I'm not going to get drunk, you know, take it.
Or if I dance
kids.
On tables, it's just going to be for fun. It's not going to be because I'm drunk.
Right. The behavior that you do not be contributed to the alcohol.
Dancing on tables, you know, isn't the worst thing in the world, as long as you're not doing it like Boatwright's Bakery or something. That would be kind of weird.
Exactly.
Awkward.
So, I mean, it's about teaching them responsibility when it comes to alcohol. So,
and you're saying with legal substances, there is a place of responsible use that may vary from person to person based on their own individual
right
physiology and other reactions to substances. Okay, so the same thing holds true for prescription cannabis users then, right? I mean,
yes,
it's medicine, and I'm using it as medicine, and I'm not driving while medicined.
And they have, unfortunately, cancer.
Or some other condition, chronic back problems,
arthritis.
Headaches, you know, whatever. You know, it seems like there's a fairly substantial list of conditions that cannabis seems to somehow magically assist with. And you know, it's not my game or my argument or anything, but they are now in the same boat as someone who is using alcohol, and they're basically legally using a substance
with restrictions.
Sure, absolutely. And you would just model that with your kids then, I suspect.
Yeah. So as a parent, concerned parent, you know, here they are 12 years old, you know, at the age that kids are put at a risk of experimenting with drugs, the average age, as you said, what can parents do, or the symptoms? Notice, wait a minute, what are the symptoms of drug use that parents should be aware of?
You know, that you mentioned that a lot of parents don't even know the children when they're normal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard for them to identify when there's symptoms that change. Maybe like the increased appetite, the slurred speech, the redness in the eyes. But a lot of parents don't notice the symptoms. I mean, I have kids that admit using in their own home, and their parents have no idea. Or maybe they do,
so
and it's denial.
Those are signs of intoxication. What about signs of life problems? I mean, is that another way we could know if somebody may be using?
Withdraw. They withdraw. They want to be alone. They start changing friends. There's drastic changes in their behavior.
Grades, maybe?
Grades, definitely. Definitely. Lack of motivation for anything. It's just something that affects the entire person.
So when somebody's 14 and all of a sudden they don't want to go over to Tia's house for Sunday afternoon, hang out with the family and barbecue stuff, it's not just because they're 14. There may be something going on. You might want to check on that.
Right. Right. I mean, and the minute you said that, you know, my flags went up. Yeah.
What are one of the scary drugs is meth. What are the symptoms of those? Is that also the slurred speech and red eyes, or what are they?
No, meth is hyperverbal, meaning they speak really fast.
So those are some of the signs that parents should check out. If all of a sudden you have a kid that's always talking.
Yeah, always talking, not sleeping, playing their Xbox, their PlayStation till 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mom, no, I'm not asleep. No, I'm not tired.
How common is methamphetamine use amongst troubled youth? Is that something
is
it fairly rare?
I can only speak from my experience here working in the El Centro population. Being that I have a lot of the kids that their parents used meth, one of the things that they say is, I'll never touch it. But yes,
famous last word.
They smoke marijuana 3 times a day. So.
But I guess what I wonder is, you know, in working in this field, one of the things you begin to notice is that meth use isn't cool. It doesn't make you cooler. It destroys your life. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Well, I mean, among girls.
So are the kids smart enough that they've figured this out, and now it's kind of not cool to be a meth user, and so it's going to kind of extinguish itself in the next generation?
With my kids, I do see a fear. I do see a fear in regards to the term that they use is tweaker.
Yeah, which is not cool, which is like a euphemism for uncool person.
They associate that with the sores on their body.
Which is also not cool.
Also because meth use is more visible. You get the acne on the face.
Also not cool.
Teeth.
The teeth start rotting and falling off. So there is a fear, at least with the youth that I work with. But they still hang on to the old marijuana's a plant, so it's not going to hurt
natural.
Me. So, right. So they still try and hang on to that, and all I can do is keep providing facts and knowledge and information on how they really truly are affecting their brain and their body. And
now we've learned that it could lead to psychosis.
For
the research, yeah.
Perhaps for people who are going to be psychotic anyway.
Yeah.
A leads to B.
No, but it could. I mean, it could maybe, we don't know. They probably, people who have psychosis now probably started using marijuana when they were young.
Well, and I've had youth here in the school that have experienced already drug-induced psychosis only with marijuana.
So then most likely they'll, as they grow up, they might continue.
Is one of the wives' tales that are like rumors or kind of like street knowledge that weed is so much stronger today? Is that true?
Yeah, they talk about Kush and ganja and all these other names, slang terms of chronic, and I got this and that, and they are saying that it's just, in their terms, better.
So humans with their creative genius have turned marijuana into a hard drug now.
Right, and I remind
them. It's more potent. Right. Probably most potent from the 60s or 70s.
And they did do research on that, and there is information through NIDA that reports that the marijuana now is, the THC level now is higher than it was back then. So through the chemical alterations and everything that they've added to it, and so leading to
And it seems that there's more things coming out, more different drugs coming. You know, just a couple of years, probably 20 years, meth, you know, it was around, but not as widespread. Or people, what do you mean as methamphetamine? What do you mean by that? And then the Rohypnol, that too. So there's, and more things coming up too. You know, the bath salts that are still
raised their ugly heads. Mostly in the eastern U.S. and the southeast.
But they're not outlawed. They're illegal, and some of them are. You can buy them at
convenience
stores. So it's. I hope the government gets on it and bans it quickly.
Well, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see if humans have been changing their consciousness forever, whether it's, hey, I'm going to have a piece of candy right now because the sugar is going to do something to me, or, you know, a cup of coffee, or, you know, ever since we figured out what alcohol is and how to make it, and, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see historically, as Paula points out, we're kind of changing who we are now as people, and see how that kind of intersects, because, we're complicated creatures.
So
there's no doubt about it.
So what I'm trying to say is that there's new drugs coming up.
Yeah.
And there's so many things coming up. Parents can't keep up to date with the information, but the way they
Or the harm potential.
Yeah, or the harm potential. But the way they can keep up with it is keeping tabs on your kids, get communication, talking to them, be aware, get involved with them. Get involved. Be involved with them.
But not involve using substances, because that's not cool.
It's true. So
DePaul's like nodding her head.
That's the key to it, you know, the way to prevent it.
Paul, thanks for coming aboard today.
Okay.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And next week.
We got a drum roll. Hang on.
Next week we have Mireya Felix and Yolanda Romero. They're from IBC Outreach Programs, Focus on Recovery and Education.
All right. So there's lots of kiddies out in IVC, and we want them to have happy and helpful and good lives, too. So join us next week. We'll talk about what to do with the young adult population. Scott, Maria, was Paula.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.